Medicom Medical Publishers produces peer-reviewed reports and highlights on major medical meetings. We bring the Congress to the physician.
Welcome to this podcast, which is brought to you by Medicom Medical Publishers. Today, I will discuss six presentations that were held at annual meeting of the American Heart Association, which was held in Philadelphia from 16 to 18 November of this year. Enjoy listening. The first study I would like to discuss is a phase 3 SELECT trial presented by Dr. Michael Linkoff of the Cleveland Clinic in Ohio, USA. The randomized, double-blind, placebo-controlled phase 3 SELECT trial assessed the safety and efficacy of the GLP-1 receptor agonist semaglutide added to standard of care in patients with pre-existing cardiovascular disease and overweight or obesity, but without diabetes. The 17,604 participants were randomized 1:1 to 2.4 mg semaglutide subcutaneously administered once weekly or a placebo. Of note, the dosing of semaglutide was built up, starting at a dose of 0.24 mg and increasing to the anticipated dose of 2.4 mg at week 16. The primary outcome was a composite of cardiovascular death, non-fatal myocardial infarction, or non-fatal stroke, measured at week 48. Semaglutide met its primary endpoint in this trial, expressed Dr. Linkoff. The event rate was 8.0% in the placebo arm and 6.5% in the semaglutide arm, with a corresponding hazard ratio of 0.80, a 95% confidence interval of 0.72 to 0.9, with a p-value below 0.001. Further, the primary outcome result was consistent across predefined subgroups. The first confirmatory secondary endpoint of cardiovascular death was numerically but not significantly in favor of the semaglutide arm, with a hazard ratio of 0.85, a 95% confidence interval of 0.71 to 1.01, and a p-value of 0.065. The second and third confirmatory secondary endpoints, which were a heart failure composite and death from any cause, showed benefits for participants randomized to semaglutide over those randomized to placebo, with hazard ratios of 0.82 and 0.81. Finally, no unexpected safety issues were encountered. The rate of gastrointestinal adverse events was higher in the semaglutide arm than in the placebo arm, with 10% versus 2% and a p-value below 0.001. However, the rates of serious gastrointestinal events were similar between the groups. Some other important results came from the phase 3 AZALEA-TIMI-71 trial, which tested abelacimab against rivaroxaban in patients with atrial fibrillation. The multicenter randomized active-controlled AZALEA-TIMI-71 trial compared the bleeding profile of the factor XI inhibitor abelacimab with the DOAC rivaroxaban in patients with atrial fibrillation, or AF, and a moderate to high risk of stroke. The participants, 1,287 in total, were randomized in a 1:1:1 fashion to receive 90 mg or 150 mg abelacimab subcutaneously administered once per month, or 20 mg rivaroxaban orally administered once daily. The primary endpoint was major or clinically relevant non-major bleeding. Dr. Christian Ruff of the Brigham and Women's Hospital presented key findings. The trial was terminated early because the data monitoring committee reported abelacimab yielded a larger than anticipated reduction in the primary endpoint compared with the active comparator, announced Dr. Ruff. At the time of termination of the trial, abelacimab displayed a factor XI inhibition over 95% in both dose groups. Further, the occurrence of major or clinically relevant non-major bleeding was significantly lower in the 90 mg group with a hazard ratio of 0.23 and 95% confidence interval between 0.13 and 0.42, a p-value below 0.001, and also in the 150 mg group with a hazard ratio of 0.33, 95% confidence interval of 0.19 to 0.55, p-value below 0.0001, compared to the rivaroxaban group. No significant difference was observed in the risk of stroke or systemic embolism between the rivaroxaban group and either the 90 mg abelacimab group or the 150 mg abelacimab group. However, the rates of these events were low and were only evaluated as exploratory endpoints, commented Dr. Ruff. Finally, there were no substantial differences between the safety profiles of the two agents. The Phase 1b HEART-1 study tested the CRISPR-based editing medicine VERV-101 for patients with heterozygous familial hypercholesterolemia and a higher risk of cardiovascular events. In total, there were 10 patients. These patients were allocated to four single infusion dose groups, ranging from 0.1 mg per kilo to 0.6 mg per kilo. The patients had severe atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease and a high risk for cardiovascular events, added Dr. Andrew Bellinger, who presented the study. The primary endpoint was the safety and tolerability of the agent. In the higher dose cohorts, we saw blood PCSK9 protein level reductions of 47, 59, and 84%, noted Dr. Bellinger. Also, blood LDL cholesterol level reductions of 39, 48, and 55% were reported in three participants in the higher dose groups. The patient in the highest dose group had the 55% reduction, and this reduction was maintained up to day 180, added Dr. Bellinger. As for safety, four infusion site reactions were noted and some transient reversible increases in ALT levels in the higher dose groups. Mean bilirubin levels remained below the upper limit of normal, according to Dr. Bellinger. Finally, there was one serious cardiovascular event, a myocardial infarction, that may have been related to treatment. These preliminary results suggest that single-course gene editing medicines may become an option in patients who require deep LDL cholesterol reductions over decades, decided Dr. Bellinger. Then there was the Phase 2 CARDIA-1 study, which tested cilibeciran as an agent for blood pressure reduction. The results were presented by Professor George Bakris of the University of Chicago. The Phase 2 CARDIA-1 study randomized 394 participants with mild to moderate hypertension, 1:1:1:1:1, to placebo or one of four dose levels of the subcutaneously administered RNA interference therapeutic cilibeciran, ranging from 150 mg once every 6 months to 600 mg once every 6 months. The primary endpoint was a change in 24-hour mean ambulatory systolic blood pressure from baseline to 3 months. At 3 months, all cilibeciran groups were associated with significantly larger reductions in 24-hour mean ambulatory systolic BP than placebo, said Professor Bakris. In the lowest dose group, the reduction was minus 14.1 mm mercury compared with placebo, and in the highest dose group, the reduction was minus 15.7 mm mercury compared with placebo. These reductions appear to be maintained at 6 months, with corresponding reductions of minus 11.1 for the lowest dose group and minus 14.2 for the highest dose group. The agent also displayed a favorable safety profile, according to Professor Bakris. No serious or severe drug-related adverse events were reported. However, the rates of hyperkalemia and hypotension were somewhat higher in the cilibeciran group, with 6% versus 3% and 4% versus 1%. According to Professor Bakris, these cases were mostly mild or moderate and did not lead to treatment discontinuations. These data support the quarterly or biannual dosing of subcutaneous cilibeciran to reduce the blood pressure of patients with hypertension. Some other interesting results came from the Phase 3 PROMINENT trial, which tested pemafibrate in patients with type 2 diabetes and mixed dyslipidemia. The results were presented by Dr. Aruna Pradhan of the Brigham and Women's Hospital. In the double-blind, randomized-controlled PROMINENT trial, the PPAR alpha agonist pemafibrate did not outperform placebo in reducing cardiovascular events in a population of patients with type 2 diabetes and mixed dyslipidemia. We did see an interesting but non-significant trend with respect to new or worsening peripheral artery disease, or PAD, added Dr. Pradhan. The current post-hoc analysis hypothesized that pemafibrate reduced clinical ischemic ulceration and gangrene, which are considered microvascular and microorgan complications of PAD. In the subpopulation of patients with ulcers or gangrene, 91 patients in total, pemafibrate showed a significant reduction in the cumulative incidence of these events, with a hazard ratio of 0.63, a 95% confidence interval of 0.41 to 0.96, and a p-value of 0.03 after a median follow-up of 3.4 years. Both ulcers, with a hazard ratio of 0.65 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.38 to 1.11, and gangrene, with a hazard ratio of 0.49, a 95% confidence interval of 0.27 to 0.87, were positively influenced by pemafibrate treatment, whereas non-ulcer or non-gangrene PAD was not, with a hazard ratio of 0.89 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.7 to 1.13. Finally, there was a phase 1 trial that assessed lepodisiran as an lipoprotein A or LPA lowering therapy. The current phase 1 trial evaluated safety and efficacy of lepodisiran in 48 participants with LPA concentrations equal or above 75 nanomoles per liter who did not have known cardiovascular disease at enrollment. Participants were randomized to one of six single dose levels of lepodisiran, which is a small interfering RNA targeting mRNA for the LPA gene. These dose levels range from 4 mg to 608 mg. Other patients were randomized to a placebo. All of these were subcutaneously administered. The primary outcome measures were safety and LPA serum concentrations through 48 weeks, and the results were presented by Dr. Steven Nissen of the Cleveland Clinic in Ohio, USA. At 48 weeks, the mean reduction in LPA was 94% in the highest dose group, showing an excellent duration of the effect that lepodisiran had on LPA levels. The rate of adverse events was overall low, and no dose-related trend could be observed in the occurrence of adverse events. Headache, COVID-19, rhinorrhea, and ECG patch erythema were the most common adverse events. Injection site reactions were reported as well, but not more frequently in the active arms than in the placebo arm. Thus, lepodisiran delivered promising results as an LPA-lowering agent in the current phase 1 study, supporting further development of the drug.
This podcast was produced by Medicom Medical Publishers.